5. I walked outside, feeling the crisp air brush against my face. Coming from Australia, then to Madagascar, then to Japan in December was a reminder that it was winter in a lot of the world. Japan always felt slightly more like home than most countries. The people were quiet and friendly, the streets clean, and a sense of pride emanated in everything they accomplished. "Alone time?" Veronica asked from the hotel entrance. I stared into the distance toward the enormous snow-capped peaks of Mount Fuji in the setting sun. "Something like that." She came outside, wrapping her arms around herself. There was a dusting of snow on the ground, but most of it melted as it hit the pavement.
"Hunter seems pleased."
"He has what he's been after for a long time."
"The token?"
she asked. "Validation."
"You like him, don't you?"
"I respect him. He believes in a cause greater than himself, and he's trying to ensure its detection."
"Mount Fuji. Seems like an odd location to hide something, doesn't it?"
I watched her looking at the famous peaks and smiled. "They didn't hide it there, but it's kind of brilliant if you think about it. It's actually 30 kilometers from here and 20 from Fuji." I pointed left of the majestic mountain.
"So if anyone discovered the token might be near Fuji, they'd start there instead? Why this elaborate ruse? Why not dump them at the bottom of the ocean?"
A snowflake landed on her nose. She looked at it cross-eyed and blew it away with a puff of breath. "I don't have the answers. I can only assume they wanted someone to find them. Why else leave a trail at all?" I had to think it was something Clayton had done. His gravestone had led the way to Venezuela and the case, as well as the locker, etched with the remaining coordinates. "I'm just following the breadcrumbs."
"You're doing a good job. Care for a drink?"
Veronica pointed to the doors and I joined her inside. The lobby was warm. The hotel was probably the finest in Fujinoyama, with clean white tile and ambient lighting. "Where are the others?" I asked.
"Hunter and Tripp are securing a permit. I haven't seen Marcus,"
she told me. Neither had I, and that was concerning. He was probably just sleeping off his jet lag after the last week of hectic travel. "Shall we?" The hostess spoke English and ushered us into the bar. It was a weekday, and the bar was quiet in the late afternoon. A couple of businessmen in suits sat talking quietly to one another over beers, and they stopped as we walked by. We took seats at the marble bar near the far end, where no one could sit behind us. We hadn't seen any signs of the Believers for a while, but I had a feeling they were out there still searching for me. I was underdressed, even for this bar, wearing a plain, long-sleeved t-shirt and jeans. But Veronica wore a hoodie with dark leggings, so we made an equal pair. The bartender approached, a serious expression on his face as he awaited our drink orders. We opted for local beers, and he poured them, setting the glasses on coasters before leaving to serve another guest.
"Cheers," Veronica said, clinking her glass to mine. "To the next one."
"To the next one."
"What's after this?"
"Well, we..."
"No, I mean, after this is all done. Once Hunter has his prizes and you're back in Boston."
"I don't know," I said. "I guess I'll be preparing for the new semester."
"Is it tough?"
"Teaching?"
"No," Veronica said. "Having to return to a tweed jacket and the students after being kept out here with the world at your fingertips will be the hard part."
"I guess it is," I told her. "But I need a balance. I like having a home base, and I enjoy teaching, even if some of the kids are annoying."
"I can only imagine."
"Did you go to college?" I asked. I knew next to nothing about the woman beside me, except that she was a daring pilot and didn't seem afraid of anything.
"Sure did. Art history degree from Columbia."
She averted her gaze, sipping her beer as she looked at the TV screen behind the bar. It was a local news program. "Art history. Not what I would have expected."
"I know, but that was kind of the point. My parents always wanted me to do something big with my life, and to them that meant becoming a lawyer or maybe a journalist for one of the big guys. After high school, instead of going to post-secondary straight away, I left on a whim, not telling them where I was going. I ended up in Europe and spent the next 9 months moving from one city to the next, visiting their museums, seeing exhibits, drinking wine, and eating like a queen."
She smirked, the action so natural on her. "Sounds like you brought Daddy's credit card," I said, and she stiffened.
"My stepfather is a good man. He paid for me to do it under the stipulation I'd come home to Manhattan and enroll at Columbia like he had. Seemed like a good deal. After witnessing so many wonderful things in Europe, art history made sense to me. He took it as an insult initially, but we're good. It was a long time ago."
"Did you ever use it?" I asked.
"The degree? Nah. But I can tell you the difference between Monet's brush strokes in the garden at Saint-Andrés and in Water Lilies. I ended up with a guy that owned a mechanic shop on Long Island and worked on city truck engines for a year before deciding that joining the Air Force was a good way to see the world."
She was full of surprises. "I assume that's where you learned to fly?"
"Yep. Spent a few years pulling soldiers from danger, but left and decided to work for a tour company in Hawaii. Flew the same route off Maui for 3 years, and as beautiful as it is, you can only make that trip so many times without it losing the luster."
"That's when you started this rich kid company?"
"Social media made it possible, and once I had some socialite in Greece sharing the experience with the rest of her friends, it took off."
I glanced at the TV and saw three blurry shapes in a dark backdrop.
"Is that?"
"You guys have to see this!" Marcus's voice carried loudly across the bar, and everyone turned to watch as my friend dashed past the hostess and landed at the bar beside Veronica. His laptop was open, and he pressed play on a paused video.
"We can make out three objects presently, and scientists are predicting there might be more. It seems as though the mysterious shapes are attached to one another and are separating as they travel across our solar system. Some are claiming it's the end of days. Others are hailing this as a miracle, but the scientific community is still urging everyone to be calm until more details can be determined,"
the serious newscaster said. A banner rolled along the bottom of the screen. "Doomsday or deliverance?"
"Three of them," I whispered.
"Where are they?" Marcus tapped the mouse, and another screen opened with their predicted trajectory. They were slender and dark, like slivers of rock barreling past Pluto and onward. There were dates along the line heading for Earth, and it showed them nearing Uranus's orbit.
"If they continue at this pace, we can expect arrival within 3 months."
3 months, that's not a lot of time. I took a long pull from my glass and waved the bartender over, getting another round and one for Marcus.
"And that's if they don't change speed again," Marcus reminded me.
He pressed play, and the broadcast cut to a woman questioning an elderly lady on the street in Chicago.
"This is our punishment. We filled this world with war and greed, guns and hatred, and we're being judged for it,"
the interviewee spat out.
"You think this is God's will?"
The journalist jabbed the microphone at the frantic lady.
"I don't know about all that, but I for one welcome whoever is coming for us."
The screen flicked and it showed the same interviewer talking to a man in a suit.
"What do you think of the objects?"
The objects. That was the title given by the media. It was as good a moniker as any, I suppose.
"What are you talking about?"
The guy held his coffee in one hand, a leather satchel draped over his shoulder.
"The mysterious asteroids heading for Earth?"
she informed him.
"I don't know what you're saying. I'm more into the Cubs and my work. I'll let the nerds watch the meteors or whatever."
He walked off whistling for a taxi.
"As you can see, Bob, there are a variety of reactions to the news of these objects, but I have a feeling that as word spreads, things will change shortly."
The image returned to Bob at the anchor desk, and he looked afraid.
"Yasmin, I think you are correct. There are already talks of protests and marches in New York, Paris, London, Moscow, and right here in Chicago this weekend."
Marcus closed the laptop, and I realized the bartender had already exchanged my empty glass for a full one. I took a sip.
"This is messed up,"
Marcus said.
"What if the believers are right?"
I had a hard time accepting that. The governments must know what they're doing.
"You've seen evidence to the contrary over the years, haven't you?
Maybe Hunter has a contact in the..."
"In the what?"
The billionaire had sneaked up behind us so quietly no one even noticed.
"Military, homeland, attorney's office, take your pick. I know someone, but what would you have me do? Walk in and tell them aliens are coming and I might have the only lead on how we can prevent our utter destruction?"
I almost dropped my beer but recovered.
"Wait, what did you just say?"
He pulled at a stool to my left and I slid over, making room.
"Why else are we doing this, Rex?
I thought you wanted to find this bridge.
The whole purpose is to make contact. It always has been,
Hunter said.
With whom?
Veronica asked.
We don't know, but Hardy had countless theories. He anticipated that we'd been visited by otherworldly beings thousands of years ago. They left us the means to the bridge, spread apart by such distance that it would be next to impossible to gather them all unless we had the technology, which would indicate a certain intelligence level.
Classic concept, I said. It makes sense. Only from what I read in my father's journals, they were each located by ancient civilizations, and almost all of them were revered at some point as artifacts from the stars to the locals. Hunter's hand gripped my wrist at the mention of the journal.
You have his books?
I do. At home, I lied. I'd actually brought them with me, but I didn't want to let him know that. He'd take them, and I'd lose the connection to my father I'd only just found.
What do they say?
They're short accounts of him and Clayton obtaining each token.
This is unbelievable. I funded him for years, and he wouldn't so much as...
Hunter peered at Veronica.
This is important, Rex. I don't know how much you've told our team, but I have a feeling that activating the bridge is more imperative now than ever. The arrival of the objects is like a ticking time bomb, and I fear that we'll all be destroyed should we fail.
Hunter waved down the bartender and ordered scotch. Neat. A double. I cleared my throat. I haven't told her much, Hunter, but I guess she's invested now. His drink came and he raised the glass.
To new friends.
To new friends,
Veronica said, but her face was whiter than before. The conversation had obviously affected her, and Marcus was tapping his foot on the bar stool, his hands fiddling with his beer. We're going to be fine. We have four more steps and then your guys will decipher the last location, I told Hunter, but he didn't appear to agree.
Rex, I have some bad news on that.
Marcus's phone beeped and he cut Hunter off. Bad news. What is it? I asked, looking across the bar at him.
I set an alert for local news near the town and airport in Madagascar.
Marcus rotated the phone and I recited the translation. Three local men found dead. I read the rest, seeing a brief mention of Haja and Hassin, along with a picture of a third. That was the man who led us to them at the airport.
They know what we have,
Hunter said, downing the scotch with a tilt of his wrist.
If our guides overheard anything, you can be assured that the believers know it.
I tried to remember what we'd said in front of the two men. I think we're safe. Marcus nodded.
Us too. We didn't tell Haja anything while you guys were at Tsingy.
The believers will have something to go by, and Hassin saw the token, right?
He did, I admitted. But what?
They'll double their efforts, triple. He'll want to see this through.
Hunter growled. Who? Who is he?
The leader. I don't know who's in charge any longer, only that he goes by Sovereign.
Hunter said a few words in Japanese and the bartender returned with the bottle. He left it without another word.
I can't believe they're dead,
Veronica whispered.
Who's dead?
Tripp asked as he arrived. I'd noticed him sitting in the bar for the last 10 minutes since Hunter arrived, probably trying to determine if there was anyone suspicious in the vicinity. That he was here talking to us meant he felt we were in the clear. Marcus informed the ex-seal of our African guide's fate, and he flopped on the stool.
Can't say they were great people, poaching snakes, lizards, and lemurs as they did, but I wouldn't wish that on anyone, especially knowing the cult would have interrogated them first.
I tried not to picture our Madagascar guides tied up at gunpoint. What do you know about the believers? I asked him.
Only what Hunter's told me, but from his description, they have powerful allies, and that means they've likely recruited people in my line of work. I've probably met some of them, he said.
What's next? Veronica asked.
We move quickly, faster than we wanted to, because we must remain one step ahead of them. They won't know where we're going.
Hunter's words drifted off.
They seemed to when we went searching for Castro, Marcus muttered.
Astute point, son. Keep communication to a minimum. Don't tell anyone where you are or why. No chatting to friends at home or trying to date while you're in Japan. No snooping on your ex-wife's Christmas plans. We have to stick together and find the last tokens.
Hunter said this softly, but his words held serious weight. We don't have the sixth, do we? We can't determine the coordinates, I said. Hunter took another drink and passed the bottle across toward Tripp. Veronica grabbed it on the way and splashed some into her empty beer glass.
No, my team cannot determine the location. They think it's in North America, but can't be sure.
So why do we bother? Marcus asked.
Because the believers might have it already. We can't trust the tokens in the wild. We must contain them, thus controlling the bridge,
Hunter said. There was a certain logic to it, but my shoulders slumped at the connotations. If I couldn't secure all six tokens, we had no means to access the bridge.